Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Quintessential Listening Poetry. Tonight, our very special guest is Hiram LaRue. Hiram has appeared most recently in Little Patuxent Review, Contemporary American Voices, Fourth Box Poetica, Poetry Superhighway, Poets and Artists, Everyday Poems, Linares Review out of Nigeria, Amsterdam Quarterly, and The Wild Word. His fourth collection is due out this year from Foothills Publishing House. He's been nominated for 4 Poetry Pushcart Prizes. He's a member of the Shakespeare Folger Library's Poetry Board and organizes several events in Prince George's County, Maryland, and beyond, including Poetry X Hunger and the Poetry Poster Project. He is a global hunger specialist and lives in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. On Facebook, you can find him at Hiram LaRue Poet. Everyone, tonight, here we are with Hiram LaRue. Hiram, are you there?
I'm right here. Thank you, Dr. Ingram, very much for offering this program to all the poets across the country, and it sounds like even around the world. Really appreciate your leadership on all of this.
Well, I thank you for being here as one of the guests. You bring your skills, your talents, your abilities, your words. You bring words to life, and that's what's important in terms of poetry. Well, let's begin this journey. Hiram, share some of your work with us.
Sure. I thought I would start by a poem that's a fairly short one. My dad, while he was living, had an expression that he sometimes used when he got a little bit frustrated. I never heard my father curse, but he certainly got frustrated. And when he did, he would say, "Boy, howdy." And I don't know where that came from, but this poem is called "Boy, Howdy." Modern life hurts me. Would that I could die in the arms of seed catalogs, or turn over in a bed and feel snow coming in the window. My father taught me to wave at life from cherished corners. His coat pockets were really my teenage years. Carry on is how I feel now. So, may these lines become as strikingly handsome as hands on shoulders. May they cause strangers to look up again and again. May the hope in these lines age well, like chewed pencils, or turn into stale crumbs that birds will fight over. So that's one titled "Boy Howdy," Michael.
All right. Well, let me ask this question as we begin this journey. Do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
You know, that's I've heard you interview, and you always ask really wonderful questions.
Yes.
And that's a good
Thank
one.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hard to know I can say it this way. I've always felt, I've always related to poems. I've always enjoyed listening to them, especially, or reading them. I have very big ears, and so I'd say that that's because I was made to listen to a lot of poems. I can remember as a young kid tuning in to poetry in, you know, school and so forth. So I guess the short answer would be, yeah, I think I was probably meant to enjoy poetry all along, and that enjoyment has not decreased at all as I've gone along in life. It's only grown. Yeah.
I can tell you, you're very, very prolific. Well, let me ask this question. Is there one event that sparked your interest?
I think there was probably maybe less of an event and more of reading some poems. I remember when I was in high school, I kind of exploded when I read pieces by people like Mr. Johnson, God's Trombones, E.E. Cummings, Gerald Manley Hopkins, Emily Dickinson. I think what happened in my case was I recognized or realized suddenly that language could be used in such different ways, and as a result could be made to be extraordinarily powerful. And so it was maybe less of an event, Dr. Ingram. It was more kind of a wake-up when I was introduced to poetry that kind of made me pay a lot of attention, more attention to it.
Well, a question before you start again in terms of your work. Why do you think poetry is important?
Well, I have a piece about that. Maybe I can read it. It's what I call kind of a mini essay about what I call the power of poetry. And I think in some respects, I know this sounds a little odd, but I think poetry is powerful for what it does not do. And I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive and maybe doesn't make sense, but maybe a little bit later on or whenever I could read that little, what I call, like I said, mini essay.
Well, would you like to read it now?
Be glad to. I wrote it not long after our last election, a couple of years ago. As I was, I'll put it this way, I was surprised by the outcome. And I call it this piece The Power of Poetry. It's been picked up by several different publications and shared. And it's unlike anything else I've done. It's, like I said, it's more of an essay. It's called The Power of Poetry. Right. Poetry doesn't vote. It can't rule. It sits on no juries. It signs nothing into law. It runs no companies or houses of worship. And it never, ever wins an Academy Award or Super Bowl or war. On all of these fronts that matter, poetry is powerless. And for that very reason, of course, it's incredibly powerful. Poetry is our grins, our anger, your life, my death. It's the birds that stitch air. It's the soul of night, the feast of day, and that ever-present caution that's careless. Poetry doesn't decide. It doesn't provide. If it answers at all, it does so with questions. And to be honest, poetry doesn't care. It cares as deeply as wells do, yes, but it never brings you water. It wants nothing from you except wanting. This is probably its most gifting power. And it soars, when allowed to, over just about anything else we can imagine. It's not the clouds above us so much, but our need for them. Said all at once, poetry is powerful for what it cannot be and for the dreams it wants. If you should ever encounter a poem that makes you jump, ask yourself why. Most likely the answer, if there is one, will be from so far fully inside you that your ancestors will wink. finally, poetry is really nowhere, and so it's just about everywhere around us. It lives in the corner of your eye. It watches everything from the side. Poetry is the best glancer of all. It also aches with whatever is gone, and it cheers, even raves, for what may never be. All to say, thank goodness and badness for poetry, and for our never being completely sure how powerfully potent it really is. So that's my piece on kind of my love of poetry and what I consider to be its power, Michael.
Well, I really, really like that, Hiram. And one line really, really stuck out to me. It never brings you water.
That's right.
It never brings you water. That, to me, was such a powerful, powerful line. It really touched me. Talk a little bit about that construction of it never brings me water. What made you think of that? I know that you're
well,
a poetry hungry specialist.
It doesn't necessarily satisfy. At least, you know, I can only speak from my own experience. But it sometimes never satisfies, and I think that's why it never brings you water. And that's one reason I love it so much, because it opens up, it tends, the poems that I really enjoy reading are ones that don't answer, they open up the questions. And so they if they do satisfy, it's by the call to explore that they offer. Not sure if I'm being clear, Michael, but it's not so much that they feed you or slake your thirst, it's more that they make you hungrier and make you thirstier to find out. That's what I love about poetry, the open-endedness of it, if maybe another way of saying it.
Well, having an opportunity to read your work, as I shared with you earlier prior to the broadcast, to me your work is very accessible. Was that purposeful?
I try to, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I try to make the work accessible. Having said that, I have a lot of friends who kind of pat me on the back sometimes and say, Hiram, it's interesting to hear your work, but I'm not exactly sure I understand what you're saying. So,
okay.
You know, it's, I'll put it this way. I like to use kind of more comfortable language. I'm not real good at using very complicated language. And at the same time, I typically don't tell many stories in my poems. I used to. Some of my older poems told a little bit of a storyline. I don't tend to do that as much anymore. I tend to kind of use the words to, it sounds kind of corny, but kind of paint images or try to, you know, describe a feeling or something like that. Yeah. But I do try to use language that's a little bit more accessible. Yeah.
Well, let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
Sure.
All right, my name is Michael Anthony Ingram. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry. Our very special guest is Hiram Luru. We are back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry. I'm here with Hiram Luru. Hiram, please share another of your works.
Sure. This one is titled Boat. It's one that I wrote several years ago now. I don't have a son or now a grandson, but I wrote this piece as if I did. This one is called Boat. I don't care. I don't care if his hair is combed bad. He is my son. I love every shoestring of him, every bit that he thinks he knows. 15 years. I don't care what he becomes, because he'll become something. Look at him. He'll become more than those red ears or grinning legs. He'll become even more important than midnight. More and more, I hold him by his shoulder less and less. And when I do, it's as if he can't be here forever. I think I'll get him a boat to carry and watch him like the minute that just went by. In the long run, nothing I do will matter. I know that. But look at him, especially when he's reaching for something. There must be a whole other world out there somewhere that's missing him. So that one's called Boat, Michael.
I really like that. I really like that. Where do you write, Hiram?
Well, sometimes I'm dangerous driving, because sometimes I try to write a little bit in the car when I'm driving. You know, that's not safe. That's not wise.
I sometimes write
right before I slip off to sleep. I just had a chance, and I certainly don't mean to brag, but it was just a wonderful opportunity to travel to Ireland for a week and work at a writer's cottage on an island off of Ireland. And between, you know, looking at the amazing landscapes there, trying to also study a little bit about the poetry of the Irish potato famine, and having a chance to write, I wrote there quite a bit, particularly of an evening. My typical schedule is to write a little bit more of an evening. But I've just recently talked to some friends who said, oh, no, they have a very scheduled, you know, time of day when they set aside all things distractive and write. And I'm not quite that disciplined. I am envious of those who can do something like that.
All right. We'll share another of your works. I'm looking forward
Alrighty.
To it.
This one, I tuned into your fine program here, I think maybe a couple of months ago, and I may have read this upcoming one, at that point. It's called How Long Will This Last? Maybe you will. Maybe you won't. What matters more than whether you do or don't is how little difference it makes, like trees at night. You may think decisions are important. Maybe so, maybe not. But important isn't the point. What is what's average around you, the endless bending cedars, nature's curves that are always there. Your common sense could be solid or foggy. You could be very determined or loose, maybe young or asleep. You may have family or just wander at dawn. These differences signify nearly nothing. Instead, you need to realize, however you can, that the lifting point is when you are sleeping, and that the best work, the very best work, you will ever do is when you are opening the barn. So, Michael, that one's titled, How Long Will This Last?
Yes. You know, you've been very prolific. What are some of the predominant themes of your work?
The think I draw a lot from rural life, rural settings. I'm not as much of an urban poet as so many wonderful poets are. I also, my eye tends towards landscape, to the trees, to the plants in the landscape. And so those are always sources of poems that, you know, I return to time and time again. And then, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but as I get older, I think more about you know, legacy, looking back, looking forward, kind of taking things, you know, with a deeper breath. So some of that age-related perspective kind of sneaks into the poems as well, Michael.
All right. Do you sit and think through every word of every stanza, or do you write freely and allow the words to flow?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. The kind of the process. Probably a little bit of both. Often I'll write in a rush, what I call a gush, and of course, I think it's the best thing that I've ever written, and then I go back to it in 3 or 4 days, and it's like, oh, no. And so at that point, I'll, you know, begin to revise. I think, to be honest about it, probably write longhand often, and then transfer it to the computer. And when I do that, I begin to, for some reason, putting it in type makes it a little, I can be a little bit more objective about it at that point, and I can see, you know, where it needs some help and some work. I also often say, and I do believe this strongly, that for me, my very best critic is time. If I can set a piece aside for 3 or 4 weeks or even longer and come back to it, often I won't even recognize it. I mean, it's like, no, I didn't write that. Or no, I'm not very proud of that. Or, you know, okay, there's something here that I can continue. I still relate to. I enjoy this and need some work, but it's worth keeping. So time for me is a real helpful tool in sorting through what I want to try to hold on to and what I want to kind of let go of.
Well, speaking of letting go of a poem and holding on to a poem, please share another.
Okay. Recently, I've been working on I don't know if I'd say I've been working on another collection, but I've noticed that I typically don't have themes for collections. They're just kind of a hodgepodge of pieces. But here recently, I've been really grateful. I retired about 3 years ago, and as I say, retirement is a gift. I love my work. I love the people who I worked with and the programs, but I really also just enjoy having time to work on poetry and do other things that I really enjoy doing. And so I've been writing what I've noticed are poems that kind of express gratitude. So I've been thinking, well, maybe another collection could be something like Gratitudes. We'll see how that all works out. But this piece is called Magic, and it's kind of in that mode of being grateful and celebrating, you know, the luckiness, I guess you'd say, of at least my experience. Magic. The stars in your chest, the sounds of their glow, their flash blink wings, their touch top of skies, their leaps towards light, these grateful, urging, holy stars in your chest, and now in your throat, their voices of beams, and even on into your heart and beyond their blaze. Each star that starts in your chest and spins out from there, spins you as nothing else can, as magic comes true, with your chance so inside and out, with every star so over the moon. So that one's called Magic, Michael.
Again, you've written very prolific, What style of poetry do you prefer? Freestyle, rhyming, haiku? Do you have a preference in terms of your writing?
My answer to that question is yes. I like it
okay.
all.
Okay.
I love performance poetry, slam poetry. I love haiku. I like formal, free verse, you know, sonnets, pantoons. I just enjoy, I'm not a very, what would you say, studied or selective poet. I just
mm-hmm.
enjoy it all. It's not so much for me the form as it is, as I was mentioning here a few minutes ago, kind of the hauntingness, what I call the haunt of a poem, what it leaves behind, what it causes me to see anew, what it makes me realize that I hadn't realized before. And that can come and be delivered, you know, in any kind of wagon. It can be in free verse. It can be in rhymed. It can be spoken word right up at the mic. That's a little bit, I love those all. And it's more the what's left behind in its wake that I love about poetry.
Now, what is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice? I know that you share your work around in Upper Marlboro as well as other parts of the District of Columbia and beyond. What is the difference between your voices? Or is it maybe there's not a difference?
I'm laughing because often several poets who I know and love will often say that their voice changes radically when they get up at the mic and they read their work, and it does, and I think probably mm-hmm. mine does too. I tend to be, I guess, maybe just a tad bit more deliberate, read a little bit more slowly. I don't typically use a lot of gesturing. I'm not a performance poet.
All right.
But I do tend to be a little bit more, I would say, deliberate as I'm trying to read the word, mainly because often poetry comes past you so quickly that if the presenter isn't reading it kind of carefully, I guess you'd say, or isn't offering it carefully, the listener can often lose a lot of the words, not even understand what the words are. And so I try to kind of make sure that I read slowly enough that people can kind of pick up and hopefully move with me through the poem and not get hung up or lost along the way. So I try to kind of slow down a little bit when I'm reading.
So you want the listener to move with you through the poem?
Yeah, I kind of like that. I love looking out when I'm reading, with a group. I love to look out at the audience and see if people are yawning, sleeping, working on their tablets, or paying
mm-hmm.
attention. And of course, the latter is what I hope for. And if they're paying attention, you get a sense. I'm sure you have this kind of sense or relationship with audiences too, Dr. Ingram. Get a sense from the audience whether or not they're kind of with you or not engaged. And it's always a joy when you kind of sense that they're with you and they're listening intently and are not distracted by life. they're with you for the moment, at least. So that's kind of fun.
I
typically and often here in the last few years will hand out a copy, a hard copy, of one of the poems that I'm reading, so that I love being able to read along as a writer is presenting their work. And
mm-hmm.
so I hand out one of the poems as a kind of a sample, and so the audience can kind of read along as I'm reading it. And I find that that's sometimes helpful. Folks have said that that's helped them kind of follow and travel with me through the poem.
Well, you know, I remember years and years and years ago, I attended a poetry reading in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And the poet, she was focused on the influenza in Spain, Spanish influenza. Well, wow. I heard this guy snoring.
Oh, gosh.
And it turned out that he was the person who was assisting her sell her books.
Oh, goodness.
And I said to myself, I'll never put an audience to sleep.
Well, good for you.
And that has stuck with me for 30 years, that I'll never put an audience to sleep. Hopefully. So I do understand.
Sure, and I'm sure you've perceived this as well through all of your work in the district on poetry or with poetry and your own writing. I think there's more and more interest in poetry amongst the general public. There's hardly a town, crossroads, any kind of spot you can go to now that doesn't sometimes have some sort of poetry event going on. And I'm noticing that attendance at poetry events seems to be on the upswing. I'm told that more people are buying poetry, either in hard copy or even online. The number of poetry journals available online or in hard copy is just phenomenal. And the number of people writing poetry is definitely on the upswing. So I see that all as a very healthy, exciting trend, and enjoy being kind of riding along for the ride, as I say, going along for the ride with it. One thing I did want to mention, and I don't mean to change
the subject
radically, but you mentioned the influenza epidemic. One of the things I've recently gotten real interested in, and many of the poetry friends and colleagues here in the area have helped participate in, is what we call Poetry X Hunger. And it's just simply a very informal effort to try to raise poetry's voice in the fight against hunger. And much to my pleasant surprise, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, or what's called the UNFAO, recently got behind this and provided some significant prize incentives for poets in the greater district or greater D.C. area to write poems about hunger. And we recently celebrated the winners. I think you're going to have Aaron R. on the show later on in November, early November. He won poetry competition, so hopefully he'll be willing and able to read that winning poem on your show. But we had a number of just terrific poets submitting absolutely wonderful poetry about very, as I say, moving and haunting poems about hunger, not only overseas, not only in Asia, Africa, Latin America, but in our own neighborhoods, in our own communities here in the U.S. And so that's been just a wonderful effort to be involved with. And I now have, as a result of this competition, a lot of wonderful poems at the ready to share with hunger organizations and talked with the D.C., it's not called D.C., the Capital Area Food Bank. They're very interested in using poems in their openings, meetings, and banners on websites and so on and so forth. So bringing poetry to bear and bringing all the people and all their hearts with it that poems can do often bring, enlist, to bear again in the fight against hunger. That's something that's, I'm real interested in. Sorry to get off on that track, but I just wanted to mention
That's exceptionally it's important. It's an important topic. So I'm glad you brought it up. Now, as a global hunger specialist, and again, this is potentially off topic as well, and with your work in terms of Poetry X Hunger, what have you learned about yourself?
Well, I was always shy for some reason of trying to bring my two worlds together. As I said, I really enjoyed my work on the hunger front. I thoroughly enjoyed the poetry, but they rarely met in me. I rarely mentioned at work that I did poetry and during poetry events, I rarely mention my work on hunger. When I retired, I decided, you know, it might be kind of fun to see if there's an area of overlap there. And make a very long story short, I've had the opportunity to scan and see whether or not in the greater landscape of poetry there was much being written about hunger. There's a lot about hunger of the spirit, hunger of the mm-hmm. heart, hunger of the soul, as well there should be. And those are wonderful poems. But I couldn't find too many poems. I found some, but not very many about poetry about hunger of the stomach. And okay. So I thought, well, you know, this might be something that we could begin to work in. And so as I've paid attention and learned more and heard more, I realized there is poetry out there. There was quite a bit, for example, poetry written about the Irish potato famine. I'm sure there's been poetry written about famine in Africa and in India. I need to mine some of that work. But I still think there's probably room for contemporary new voices writing about hunger today, particularly, mm-hmm. you know, in our own neighborhoods here, and bringing poetry to bear in service to trying to address and reduce and even eliminate hunger. That's a very long answer to your question, but I've tried to bring the two worlds together here lately. Yeah.
Okay. Well, please share another piece of your work.
Okay. This one is called August, so I'm reading it a couple of months late. It's called August. Okay. Who's the best person you've ever met? Out of everyone you've ever known, who would you pick out? If you say the very best person was the baseball player some summers back, then you have to say why. Maybe it was because, just like seeds and the sky, he felt with all of his might the power of distance and kept trying to show it to you. If you say the best person was the widow next door, then you're also saying how every step up leads to autumn, or even further, to a worried wisdom, because she was your school. Maybe you'll say that the best one was that kid when you were a kid, who smelled like straw or a tunnel. Surely, of everyone you've ever known, he was most like sandals. Then again, maybe you'll not think of anyone right now as you're loving around, which is fine, so long as you're good as a penny. So, Michael, that one's called August.
I like that.
Thank you.
It really makes me think. Let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and if you'd like to call in tonight to speak to Hiram, the telephone number is 646-787-1631. Again, that's 646, the area code, 787-1631. And we'll be back in a moment. Influences. Who are some of yours, and what makes them great in your eyes?
I mentioned early on here when we were visiting that when I was younger, I tuned into some of the, you know, some of the great poets, Langston Hughes, Mr. Hughes, even William Cullen Bryant, kind of a classical poet. There were lines of his work that I just thought were incredible. But it was the more experimental poets, I guess you'd call them, the E.E. Cummings, the very colorful and just amazingly sounded poems of Jared Manley Hopkins, Emily Dickinson. I've often said, oh, if I could only be one of Miss Dickinson's dashes. She just, you know, incredibly pithy and all-knowing. There are those kind of influences, and then there are a number of wonderful current poets who I probably don't know as well as I should, but many of them, you know, influence, and many of my contemporary friends here in the area influence me with their work too.
We have a couple of callers, Hiram, and I'm going to tune them in. All right.
Great.
Area code 216. The first three numbers are 409. You're on the air.
Good evening, folks. I go by the name Analysis, and I'm so glad to listen to my friend Hiram LaRue. My area code is Cleveland because I lived there, but I'm actually in Baltimore, so fortunately I had the great privilege of seeing and hearing Hiram live at any number of events, including a couple of weeks ago. And he brought together a gathering of a variety of poets, which really is a tribute to him that we kind of celebrated his birthday by all coming together and doing an afternoon of poetry for him. So
it's wonderful to hear your voice, Analysis.
I appreciate it, and I just wanted to comment on something you said earlier, which I think you phrased so well, is in terms of the haunt of a poem and what it leaves behind, what it makes you feel or do afterwards. And I thought that was so wonderfully phrased because certainly in spoken word circles, and for the listeners, Hiram already knows, for the listeners that I'm a spoken word artist in terms of poetry style, but
yes.
For many, the spoken word venue is church, really, so to speak. It's that place of release. It's that place of being able to bond in fellowship and talk about things that you would dare not talk about otherwise. You know, mm-hmm. Poetry often is the expression of joy, pain, anger, victory, rage at injustice, and so forth and so on. And you know, I think it's a great place to walk out and feel that haunt, as you phrase, Hiram. So that phrase just caught me. And again, you know, for all the listeners, this is a man who brought together about 50 poets the other week, really just because we all wanted to come in and fellowship in poetry and celebrate this great soul that Hiram is. So.
All right.
Well, thank you, Analysis.
Yes, very, very nice. Thank you, Analysis. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Got another caller here. Area code 703. The first three numbers are 527.
Yes,
you're on
hello.
The air. Hello.
Hello, yes. This is Marilyn Merritt, and I was also privileged to be at that same gathering that Analysis was just speaking about, and it was quite an exciting event. I have to say that Hiram has inspired so many different kinds of poets, and that a recurrent thread, of course, is just the way in which people are all relating to the spirituality that connects us all, and the
yes.
special kind of truth, which he embodies so well, I think, in his poetry. I would like to ask Hiram, perhaps, if he might like to comment a bit on any impact of visual stimuli that might influence his poetry.
Is that all right to do, Dr. Ingram?
Yes, please.
Well, first off, Marilyn, it's wonderful to hear your voice, too. what is it called, ekphrastic poetry, poetry written to the visual arts. I've had the pleasure, as I imagine you folks have too, Dr. Ingram and Marilyn, of working, collaborating with visual artists on pieces, and it's taken different forms. It's been where the poet has offered a poem to the visual artist and they've created something, or the visual artist has offered a piece to the poet and the poet has written something, or the poet and the visual artist work together to create something. I've had the pleasure of doing kind of all three of those types of interactions, collaboratives, and they always, always lead to the unexpected, the serendipitous. And yes, it's always fun to do. And then when and if the pieces can be literally displayed, exhibited together, that's
yes,
even more of a treat. So, I've never collaborated with dancers. I've never collaborated with folks doing video or filmography, but visual artists, yes, I've had the pleasure of doing that. I hope that's
yes,
helpful, or a reasonable response to your good question, Marilyn.
Yes. Well, I knew you had some of that background, and I was just hoping to get you to say something more about it because you have such a wide breadth of things that you have done and that you are interested in. So
It's been fun. In fact, here recently, I was telling Dr. Ingram before we got started on the show, we had a chance. I got a very good grant from the Prince George's Arts and Humanities Council about 2 years ago to put together what we call the Poetry Poster Project.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we printed up some poems, framed them as artwork,
uh-huh,
and have displayed them. And they're poems by wonderful poets in the Prince George's County. Sister Joy Alford, Lady Di Beverly, Diane Wilbon Parks, Forestine Bynum, Edgar Gabriel Seilix, and at that time the youth poet laureate for the county, for Prince George's County, Samantha Jackson. And those
mm-hmm,
all went on display and have been displayed as almost like poetic artwork, if you will,
sure,
in everything from office buildings to libraries to wineries to government buildings and coffee houses. So it's been a visualization of the power of poetry, if you will, in the county that I live in, Prince George's County.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's really wonderful, and I think sort of in concert with that, I would say that one of the things that I have noticed about poetry, and of course you've mentioned serendipity a great deal, is that it's so creative, and each person is so basically unique in terms of their own experience and
yes,
what they have brought to it, that if you get together a group of poets and listen to what each of them has to say, you just realize you could never have a single person who did all of those.
That's right.
I mean, it's just, you know, sort of an incredible experience of experiencing the creativity of the human spirit.
Kind of a,
yes,
you know, not to downplay it at all, but I call it kind of a candy box of wonders. You know, each piece is wonderful in its own right for that very,
yes,
all
that's
the
a good way of putting
great
it,
differences, as you say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to thank you again for all you've done, Hiram. As you know, Dr. Anthony Hiram has not only written such a great deal, but he's a great advocate, and he's been so encouraging to others. And
mm-hmm,
really resonates with just a wide, divergent range of poets who also really who appreciate his work. Sure.
Well, thank you, Marilyn. That's awfully sweet of you. Appreciate that.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. Yes.
Marilyn
uh-huh,
is a terrific.
Bye-bye.
Both Marilyn and Alice are terrific poets. Some ones who you might want to try to enlist onto your show, Dr. Ingram.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. That'd
yeah,
be fantastic. But we should talk about that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Enjoying your
bye,
show. Bye-bye.
Well, fantastic. Fantastic. That's great. Hiram, okay, you're held in high regard.
Well, I think maybe what it is, Dr. Ingram, is I just really, really love poetry and all the people who are involved tend to be terrific because they share that love of poetry. So, yeah.
Hmm.
All right. Well, please
nice
share another piece, Harry. Please.
Sure. Let's see here. This one, again, is a little bit older. It's called No, I Can't. Even as young as 19 years old, you'll probably want to have a full beard. A year or more later, when you're in your 20s, you'll be most likely killed at night or slip and drown through ice. Until then, good predictions are that people will look at you from behind and think of corn stalks strongly, yellow and green and slightly rustling. It's hard to tell, but they may even fall in love for a minute or two with the awful way you do things. What's important, of course, is that you're somehow here right now and are almost as timeless as fish's lips. Of the many, many, many people out there, you've got the hardest mix of promise, like a peach twig down in weeds. And you don't listen very much either. But the honest truth is, you don't really need to. In fact, the two mixed words that come to mind about you are only and so that one's called No, I Can't.
Wow, very nice. You know, I would be remiss if I did not ask you about your fourth collection. Tell me about your book.
Well, there's a gentleman up in upstate New York who runs a group called Foothills Publishing, Michael Czarnecki, and I'm working with him to hopefully, here before too much longer, have a fourth collection come out. It'll be what we call a chapbook, a short collection, and looking forward to that. And then I'm trying to kind of work on, you know, another one here. Like I said, maybe something to do with what I call gratitudes. We'll see how that all works out.
All right. Well, what I'd like you to do is to share more poetry. Please, please, please favor us with at least three of your pieces. I'd like to hear
okay.
much.
I'll try to share maybe a couple here that are pretty short.
Okay.
This one is titled, But I Can't. I want to share this all alone, ponding myself with skies, or tasseling towards open fields, ever done like branches. I want no other sound than looking, no faster blur than flurry, no greater group than blooming. More and more, I want the crowd of rain. And then this one is one that I often end with, but it's, well, maybe I will hold that if I could, if it's all right with you, Dr. Ingram. I'll hold that one.
Yeah.
So just a little bit later. It's a little bit shorter. I'll just read one other here that's a tad bit longer than the last one. It's called If
right.
He Never Hears This.
I like that one. Please, I'm glad
there's
you're
no
it.
Pattern. There's no pattern to what disappears. Nothing to make sure that our ideas are everlasting or repeated. In fact, we can't predict what stays or lingers or leaves. It may be that wishing wells, especially their walls, know this secret of a yearning to endure. Somehow fireworks do too coming down. But mostly we know that everything we know is just water. And all we are is snaps. never ask anyone anything directly. Be a swan's neck so that you find out everything by guessing. And for balance, imagine loving someone so much that it feels like you are unscrewing the lid of a jar and then going. The boring point, is this. The best friend to make is chance. Do whatever it takes to wake up tangled in the arms of maybe. Start to trust what you've done for as long as a blink. Mostly think like a windy corner. So that one's called If He Never Hears This.
You know, they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you
there
think
you go.
Emerges naturally from your work? What emerges from your work? What emerges from Hiram LaRue's work?
That probably depends on the listener. What I would like to have it emerge is a little bit of a hum song tune that stays with and maybe interests or troubles or entices the listener or reader. So that, again, I come back to this point. What I enjoy in poetry, and I think what I try to strive for in poetry, sometimes successfully, maybe a lot of times not so much, but is what's left behind. What do you leave when you leave the page or when you leave the reading? What stays with you? And, I mean, even more powerfully, if it's at all possible, what changes in you as a result of hearing, reading the poem? What's new in you as a result? So that's a long answer to your question, but
no.
That's kind of what I try to strive for. I'll put it that way. Yeah.
Right. Can you share one more before we go?
Sure. This is one that I often close down things or close my readings or whatever with. It's called Don't Tell Anyone. The hardest thing to do is keep or stay. When most of what we do sneaks out, away, or turns cousinish on us. Largely put, ours isn't ours ever. It couldn't be. We need to learn to haven't, to pine for never, to unlove love, to trust the weather. Dr. Ingram, I've really enjoyed visiting with you. You do such a terrific job of interviewing. I'm certainly hopeful one of these days you'll be willing to share some of your own work on air with the rest of us.
Yes, I will.
But
let me ask you one last thing before you go. When people hear your work, like me, they usually want more. What is next for you as a poet? I know you talked about gratitude as a project. What's next for you as a poet?
You know, it's kind of hard to say right now simply because I'm kind of kid in a candy shop. As I've retired, I've had a more chance to see, you know, what's out there, what the possibilities are. I'd love to be able to collaborate some with visual artists, good friends who are visual artists. I'm not sure. I'm kind of open, eyes open, ears open to possibilities that come along, and I would love to be able to maybe get back to Ireland and do a little bit more writing there. When I came home from Ireland, my body came home.
Oh, wow.
But my heart, mind, soul, eyes, ears stayed there. And I would just kind of like to get back there and do just a little bit more looking around, kicking around, and hopefully writing.
I mean, that piece there was a poem in itself. So you should write that.
Maybe I will.
Yes. Well, I'd like to thank you so much. You made my evening, and I'm sure you made the evening of many people out listening to this particular broadcast. You're a good man, Hiram. You're
well,
a good man.
Well, I appreciate
your, thank you.
Appreciate your poetic leadership, Dr. Ingram. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. Have a good evening. Thanks again.
All right, you too.
All right, everyone. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and this is Quintessential Listening Poetry. Everyone, please have a good night.